From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. Hundreds of Alaska Airlines flights to and from Seattle have been canceled because of snowy weather conditions. But so far, no flights to or from Juneau have been canceled. The weather is requiring the jets to be de-iced, which can take up to 30 minutes. That added time has ripple effects leading to delayed and canceled flights. There are other delays related to COVID-19. According to Alaska Airlines' blog, the Omicron variant is contributing to staffing shortages with the airline. All flights to Juneau from Seattle today so far were delayed. And on social media, travelers are reporting long wait times at Alaska Airlines kiosks in the airport and on the airline's customer service number. The airline is recommending travelers rebook online. And if you don't need to travel before January 2nd, the airline is recommending pushing travel plans back. The airline's blog says travelers impacted by the cancellations and delays might be eligible for reimbursement of their travel expenses. An Alaska Native nonprofit organization has received a $2.9 million grant to start building a totem pole trail along Juneau's waterfront. The Sea Alaska Heritage Institute says the grant from the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation will cover 10 poles. The institute's longer-term goal is to have 30 poles in place. Chinkit, Haida, and Simshan master carvers will carve their poles in communities around Southeast. They will teach apprentices their art. The poles will tell the history of their clans. Clans will select their own crests and designs. Sea Alaska Heritage Institute is working on finding funding for the other 20 poles. They're more than just news stories. So much of what happened in the last 12 months changed our lives. KTOO's Jennifer Pemberton has this look back at the most impactful stories of 2021 in Juneau.
The COVID-19 pandemic dominated the news for a second year. Juneau has one of the highest vaccination rates of anywhere in the state. Still, 9 residents died this year, all of them after the Delta surge that came to Alaska in August. Alaska's lawmakers were in Juneau for a record number of days this year because they couldn't agree on a budget. The state came within hours of a government shutdown, but lawmakers were able to pass a budget with a $525 PFD, which Governor Mike Dunleavy vetoed the next day.
As a result of many Alaskans contacting me, talking to legislators who didn't support this $500 because they too viewed it as a joke, that the $500 is going to be vetoed.
It took multiple special sessions, but eventually Alaskans received their dividends of just over $1,100. When the short cruise season was over and done with, a total of 125,000 passengers came to Juneau, which is less than 10% of the passengers from 2019, our last normal cruise season. Activists in Juneau used the light cruise season as an opportunity to gauge public interest in limiting cruise ship traffic in the future. They started gathering signatures for a ballot measure that would put restrictions on the industry. But a group of local businesses set up a counter campaign, and ultimately there weren't enough signatures on the petition to get on the ballot. In February, the Barron's neighborhood behind Juneau Douglas High School, Yada at Katle, was evacuated due to extreme avalanche danger. Tom Matisse, the city's emergency manager, went door to door telling people to leave their homes that night.
I knocked on 39 doors today. A couple of them were on the edges of the avalanche path, but that's how many houses I knocked on and logged in my record.
Luckily, no snow came down. The city's hazard maps that are used to create city code for places like the Barron's neighborhood haven't been updated since the 70s. Now it appears that 50% of the buildings in downtown Juneau are in a moderate or severe risk area for avalanche or landslide. The city assembly has yet to adopt the updated maps based on these new reports, and they've rejected updates to the maps in the past. 2021 was a great year for public art in Juneau. In July, 18 million postage stamps were released featuring Rico Llanat Worrell's depiction of the Raven in the Box of Daylight story. A few months later, his sister Crystal Worrell's multi-story mural of civil rights icon Elizabeth Perachevich went up on the side of the downtown library. And finally, who opens a restaurant during a pandemic? Ames Villanueva Alf said her gut told her to open Black Moon Coven this year. Last year, she closed her wildly popular Auk Bay space, Gonzo, after she was assaulted there.
I feel like Black Moon was my way of healing through my trauma, and continually is a place where it could be and seem super dark to people, but it actually brought a lot of life and light into my own darkness.
In Juneau, I'm Jennifer Pemberton.
On our website, we've broken up the year in KTOO News into stories by topic. We're posting a new one every day this week on ktoo.org. It's been a whipsaw year for management of the nearly 17 million acre Tongass National Forest as the Biden administration works to undo policies of its predecessors. Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick has this roundup of 2021 and the latest on the fate of the 20-year fight over the roadless rule in Southeast Alaska.
Last year, the Trump administration won plaudits from Alaska's elected leaders, exempting Southeast Alaska's National Forest from the roadless rule, which restricts road building and development. In real terms, it opened up about 168,000 acres of old-growth forest to potential logging. But while championed by Alaska's congressional delegation and Governor Mike Dunleavy, the roadless rule rollback was criticized by tribes, conservationists, and industries such as fishing and tourism, which argued that more clear cuts would be short-sighted. Here's Austin Williams, an Anchorage-based attorney with Trout Unlimited.
There's absolutely no reason for us to continue to clear-cut log old-growth forest. It's a critically important resource and something that we need to be taking much better care of.
That was shortly after word came from the Biden administration that the exemption would be overturned, restoring protections to about half the largest national forest in the country. Southeast Conference's Robert Venables says it was another U-turn from a political transition in Washington, D.C.
It's very disappointing to see the continual back and forth every 4 years.
It wasn't until November that President Biden's Agriculture Secretary, Tom Vilsack, who oversees the Forest Service, released more details of its plans.
I don't know how many times the Vilsack can announce the same thing and have it sound like news.
That was Juneau attorney Jim Clark, who helped lead a lawsuit, later joined by the Dunleavy administration, to preserve the roadless rule's exemption. It was dismissed by a federal court. But the upshot of the November announcement was the opening of a 2-month comment window for the public to weigh in on the future of the Tongass. In a filing published in the Federal Register, the Forest Service noted that Southeast timber industry is a fraction of what it once was. Tongass National Forest-related logging and sawmilling fell from just shy of 200 jobs in the early 2000s to around 60 workers in 2018. This comes as the commercial fishing industry holds steady and the cruising and independent visitor sectors expect significant growth despite hiccups caused by the pandemic. Additionally, Southeast residents who rely on the federal lands to hunt and fish for their food had argued for more protections. Don Hernandez chairs the Regional Advisory Council on Federal Subsistence. He lives on Prince of Wales Island and spent hours taking testimony from subsistence hunters, fishermen, and gatherers across the region.
It had just become pretty obvious over a long period of time that the areas of the Tongass that were most significantly impacted by past logging were all suffering harms to subsistence uses.
So far, the Biden administration's actions are a return to the drawn-out rulemaking process that could be undone by a future president. More permanent protections for the Tongass would likely require an act of Congress. The Forest Service's comment period over its proposal to return roadless protections to the Tongass remains open now until January 24th. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
This weekend, Kodiak Island broke the record for the warmest December temperature in the state. KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports that the milestone comes after months of extreme weather.
The Kodiak Tide Gauge Station on the east side of the island recorded 67 degrees on Sunday. That balmy high comes after one of the coldest Novembers on record for the island.
We have now kind of flipped the pattern over the last week or so.
That's Tim Markle, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Anchorage.
It was a very rare occurrence. This is really due to a very strong, kind of an anomalously warm ridge of high pressure that was just sitting just to the southwest of Kodiak, and very warm temperatures aloft, and that combined with those westerly winds over the mountains right along the spine of the island.
Those downsloping winds compress and warm as they come off the mountains. The entire Alaskan Peninsula saw near record highs this weekend. Kodiak's Benny Benson Airport also set its own December record of 65 degrees on Sunday. Markle says record-breaking events like 60-degree weather in December can't be directly linked to climate change, but it does increase the likelihood of extreme temperature swings.
Things are just becoming much more variable, and we're kind of seeing that a little bit with a very cold almost record-breaking November, followed by record-breaking warmth, at least across parts of the state for the month of December.
Weather models say colder weather will move in near the end of the week. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
A space technology company says they're in the final stages of examining locations for a site to launch satellites, and Unalaska is one of them. Spin Launch uses a giant centrifuge, which uses kinetic energy to hurl satellites into low Earth orbit. It's supposed to be a cheaper and greener alternative to conventional launch systems, which rely heavily on fuel. Representatives from the Los Angeles-based startup visited the island last year to present their plans to city officials. The proposed site would sit on both public land and on private land owned by the island's native village corporation. Unalaska Corporation and city officials were reluctant to comment, but KUCB requested documents from the city which described the plans for the proposed launch site. Those plans include building a road down a historic Ununga trading path, which today is one of Unalaska's most popular hiking trails. The site would cover about 20 acres and would house a 300-foot-wide facility. Emails between city officials suggest the site would launch around a dozen satellites a day and that the centrifuge would create a sonic boom with every launch. But the company says those blasts would not be heard in the city center. Proponents say the project would help diversify Unalaska's economy, create new jobs, and bring in tax revenue. Representatives from the company say they're reviewing a large number of locations and that they won't comment until they announce their decision. That is it for the KTOO News Update for Tuesday, December 28th, 2021. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.